Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday.
Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego Chicken Sandwich, Fuego Fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego Chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty Classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego Chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewell, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. I want to say happy summer to everyone out there. This is a little bit of a strange episode because I'm about to go on vacation as we sit here and record this today, and you are about to go to trial, which means your life goes into a hole as well. And so we are pre-recording a couple episodes. I say that to say I hope that everyone right now, as you are listening to this, is sitting on a beach somewhere like I am, sipping some drink, but also just basking in what I anticipate being the glow of Superman. So if you are wondering why Friends from Work hasn't covered Superman yet, this is one of those times where we just literally got too busy to get to it early, which is such a bummer. Bad movie to have that happen on, but I hope that it's crushing. I hope that everyone's enjoying it. And then hopefully you and I can see it late and still put out an episode in the future.
Yeah. I'm glad you started there, because I was going to ask you, how are you personally feeling about Superman right now? Not like when you think about going to see it, on like a scale of 1 to 10, what's your excitement level?
Yeah. I'm a terrible person to ask that question of. I feel before a Marvel movie that I know nothing about. Like I think it's going to be good. I don't know very much about the character at all. I am a 4 or 5 out of 10.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, that's fair.
Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, whatever, Rebirth would probably be like a 2 or 3 out of 10. Like, I had a chance to go as a screener and didn't go.
Yeah.
Superman's maybe a 5 or a 6, maybe. Fantastic Four is probably a 9.
You know what's interesting is this year, I think, has been, and I'm curious to see if Superman breaks the streak. It's been kind of the year of blockbuster movies that have like really low critical scores and make a ton of money. Like, I look at like the Minecraft movie was this like huge thing, you know, like made the studio a ton of money. I think it's Warner Brothers. And then, yeah, Jurassic World is the same thing. Like, I mean, it's not been destroyed by critics, but they haven't loved it, but it's making a ton at the theaters. And so I'm wondering if Superman is the one to really like the movie that is critically well received and makes a ton of money, which seems, at least on the former, it seems like it's going to land somewhere in like the mid 80s on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think it's going to be really, really good. We never question that with James Gunn as far as the quality and the care, you know?
Yeah.
And just to be clear, I think it's going to be awesome. My answer as a 5 is just, I don't have much investment into it. It has nothing to do with it. That's not my review of the movie.
No,
it's the quality of the movie. I'm anticipating walking out feeling way more excited about it, but it's just so important for people to remember, I am not in this podcast just because generically I was into all this stuff,
right?
You know, just because.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
that's all I mean.
No, I mean, it's, I think that's a fair point. And I also, I have not over the years gone to see many DC movies in theaters. Like the Nolan ones, obviously, the Batman. I think I saw Man of Steel in theaters, but I didn't see any other Snyder verse stuff.
It's going to be fun for all of our listeners who are super into that stuff to finally have something that they can like to have the cultural moment to be super proud of. I'm super stoked about that. In fact, we actually have you seen this? We have a few listeners of this podcast that started their own podcast covering the DC stuff. So shout out Sons of Gun podcast, which is a great name. Three loyal listeners started that podcast where they talk about DC stuff. We may have to do a joint pod, I think, about Superman. It would be kind of fun.
That would be fun.
But just because I don't know that much about it. I'll just be reviewing it as a movie.
But well, which is also interesting.
It's fun for those people, you know?
Well, I think it's, you know, for me, I say that I haven't always been that invested in these DC things, in part because, I found myself really excited for this movie over the last, really like ever since it was announced, but more and more as it's gotten closer, despite the fact that like some of the, you know, we've talked about this, like I do think Gunn has maybe painted a bit of a target on his back at times where it's like, I'm not like he,
for sure.
He raised expectations, I think, in how much he has contrasted what he's doing with what Marvel has done. And I think that in some ways is like creating the environment that you and I talked about briefly on the last episode about, or two episodes ago, maybe, where it's this sort of like, who's going to win July. And I don't like looking at it that way. But I like everything I'm reading about the new Superman movie is what I was hoping James Gunn would do. Like it sounds like he is doing a hyper sincere, like almost intentionally corny Superman. And I kind of feel like that's what you have to do. And it's one of those characters that like we've talked about this. We'll talk about this when our final Friends from Work, Fantastic Four. Rewatch comes out on Friends from Work Plus. Like
we did talk about it a couple days ago. Weird timing. That's the other funny thing about talking about Superman right now is it's been out for a week. If you're listening to this, so it's kind of funny. But
I think it's just this is the property and the Fantastic Four that like most require some level of that. And sincerity. Trying to run away from it is never like it's almost not worth making the movie because. Mm-hmm. If it's just like Superman, the tortured, powerful, like uber god, then it's just like the whole thing is kind of bleak. But I don't know. I thought like reading about it, it sounds like there are not really any needle drops in this movie.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's not like the humor seems like it's going to be pretty different from like Guardians and Suicide Squad. So
it'll be interesting to see if James has learned as a director too, you know? I'm pigeonholing him as far as like my point is he's not stuck. I mean, he can grow too. So if the humor in Guardians 2 wasn't totally his scene, maybe he learned a different style, a little bit of wit to the humor.
Yeah.
It's actually a really fun conversation and a good transition into today's Fantastic Four First Steps mailbag before we see that movie. It's a good transition just because you're right. It is interesting to have both of these films coming out at the same time this summer. It's not like Superman and Winter Soldier are coming out at the same time.
Right.
It's two very sincere, almost throwback style movies. Yeah. Thunderbolts would have been perfect. Mm-hmm. That's in that way, don't take this the wrong way. And that way they are direct competition in that they are very much fulfilling the same vibe. So a lot of the things you just said about Superman, I kind of hope apply to First Steps too.
Yeah. I think one thing I'm curious about is, you know, obviously one of these movies is kind of kickstarting a whole universe and one is potentially like ending a universe and just sort of kickstarting a franchise. Like, they are both kind of doing this classic thing and I'm curious like where they, like I still kind of, and we'll get into this as we start talking about First Steps more, but like I feel like the Matt Shakman of it all, like looking back at WandaVision, he's gonna, I think, have this underlying tension like in the same way with WandaVision, it's like everything is so like set accurate, you know, and like leaning into this like old sitcom vibe, but then you have this like uneasiness under it.
Okay, stop. Let's start right here with a phone call from Tony.
What's up, guys? This is Tony, currently Mr. Tonetastic on Discord. I wanted to ask you guys about the time period or world that Fantastic Four is set in. Other than, you know, like Captain Marvel and First Avenger, we haven't really had a true period piece in the MCU, and those are only period pieces because that's the time they actually took place in. With Fantastic Four, you've got, you know, a ton of different options to pull from in terms of source material. So we know that Shackman can do period pieces, and he might have chose it because he likes it. But yeah, I wanted to see what you guys thought about why it's set what appears to be, you know, 60s era, what that means for the story. And then if it is kind of multiversal, like we're assuming it will be, and these characters do join the Doomsday Avengers, what does that mean for those characters to be coming from an entirely different time period where technology and the world is so different? So appreciate your time. Love the podcast. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Tony. You see why I stopped you.
Yeah,
paused you.
Yeah.
So continue your thought.
No, Matt, that's perfect.
Matt Shackman doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that, I think there are a couple of layers to it. One, as we've said, I think the Fantastic Four, it really, like even in the Hickman comics that I love that were written in the late 2000s, like he is sort of evoking a classic, like he brought on an art team or worked with an art team, I shouldn't say brought on, that was trying to kind of emulate the old Kirby style, even in the just the way the characters looked and the like new uniform designs, where it's like, yeah, it was rooted in like the late 2000s Marvel continuity, but there's something about the kind of like that space age hope and exploration, like the kind of Kennedy era optimism that I think the Fantastic Four requires, where it's like if you put them into a like the modern day, I think it's tough. Like even if you set it in like our current real world and in the MCU, if you put it in like a post snap world, post Avengers world, I think that that is also kind of tough. Like you kind of want like the Avengers are the heroes that you call when everything has gone wrong and there's like a last stand for planet Earth. And yes, Fantastic Four has had those moments too. And I think that we're getting a version of that in this movie, but I think that you need to have them set up first as the kind of like beacon of hope, like pushing humanity mm-hmm. forward before you can kind of start pulling at those threads. And that's where I think what I was saying before, like Shackman is so good at that, like this kind of veneer of like warmth, but then under it, this like not anything nefarious within the team, but just knowing that there's something like really dark coming, or like whether it's boiling under the surface or like on the horizon. I think it's like, I think the period and Shackman like will both help further each of those goals, I guess, like in terms of like the optimism and the that tension.
In that way, I think the movie is going to end up a little bit different than Superman. My anticipation of Superman is that it's got the sincerity. Not as much a period piece, obviously, but it's got the sincerity. But I think it's going to mostly end pretty hopeful.
Yeah.
I do wonder if First Steps is going to be playing with the Pleasantville thing, like you're talking about. Like they're yeah, only they're advertising so much of the, we love you, Fantastic Four, and they're the celebrities, and they're the only heroes. And then what would it look like for them to lose all that?
Yeah.
But I think you're right. You have to have this period piece, this era of hope for the future appearances to work. Like once you establish this is where they come from and they are a family and hopeful and all of that, then I want to see what happens when they lose it all or they run into the Avengers from a, you know, 50 years in the future.
Yeah.
And those interactions, or they run into X-Men, or a world where like with X-Men where there's mutants everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
Like there are so many fun things you can do, but I do think you need to have this hopeful 60s piece first. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't think you feel the impact of that.
I think that's right.
And just lastly, Matt Shakman, I've only seen him literally in WandaVision, but he did it so well, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The live studio audience, the props and stuff, that I'm not sure there is a better choice right now for it. And it should be said that 30 minutes of the film has been shown already to some fans, and some of the feedback is that exactly. Same thing we said with Gunn, which is, oh my gosh, they're clearly bold and like they're going for it and they care. Like yeah. There has not been a single aspect of it thus far that has been, oh, that's underbaked, you know, like that Robbie. And that's a good ending point on this specific call. We've talked about some films, that being the case. Just recently, we ranked all the TV shows. We talked about sometimes something is quote underbaked, like
yeah.
All the bones were there, but we just didn't sit with it long enough to really figure out all the details.
Yeah.
I just don't think you're going to say that from this film. You might say it's too fast paced. You might say it's too grandiose in what it's trying to do. I could see all that happening. I don't think anyone's going to watch Fantastic Four and go, they just didn't really spend much time like really dialing in what they wanted to do. Now yeah. I could be wrong, but man, if that's the critique, I'll be stunned.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it reminds me in some ways of Deadpool and Wolverine. Those, I think these movies are going to be radically different in almost every other way. But that was one where it had been in the works for a bit. It was their big push, really their only push for 2024. And I think whatever you thought about that movie, I don't think anyone felt like it was like not fully ready in the same way that I think parts of like Brave New World felt. The only other thing with Matt Shakman that I want to highlight that I always forget is he has also like he directed several episodes of Game of Thrones. Like I think so he's got that kind of like warm,
that's actually really interesting.
Yeah, like I forget. I want to pigeonhole him sometimes into like WandaVision because I know that he has a background in sitcoms, but he also
Game of Thrones has got some darkness and edge
and, you know, some like wide scale, like epic stuff. So I think that,
oh, I mean, some of the trailer stuff of the wide scale stuff looks yeah. unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Like, did you see that trailer of Silver Surfer actually surfing through like yeah. this explosion? It looks insane.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it makes me feel better and better about that choice because it's someone, you know, it's like some of the stuff that we talked about early on with Ryan Coogler, where there are certain scenes where it just feels like he's so in it and understands exactly what he's doing and how to evoke what he wants to evoke. And then there are times with like kind of the action scene, like the larger action sets where it feels like he wasn't quite there yet. I think Sinners, you see him starting to move again. You don't have like large scale epic battles, but I think he's getting more and more of an understanding of that stuff. But I think seeing Shakman know how to do that also before he launches into a big film kind of gives me a bit more comfort as well.
The Game of Thrones detail I didn't know about, and that actually legitimately makes me feel better about it.
Yeah.
Okay. I have three questions left and there's one more kind of in this vibe and then two kind of in the other vibe. So I'm going to stay in this vibe for 1 second from Austin.
Hey, Kyle. Hey, Robbie. Just saw your message regarding Fantastic Four questions, and I had a really good one. This is Austin, longtime listener, huge fan of the show. Really like what you guys are doing with the Fantastic Four rewatch right now. And I was just wondering that how important is it for the new Fantastic Four movie to nail the first family dynamic for the Fantastic Four team? I feel like it is a huge point that all of the previous iterations failed to fully flesh out, and I feel like that is a big reason why those movies didn't hit and stick with audiences nearly as much as they should have. A huge point of the Fantastic Four is that they are actually a family. We've seen so many other teams in the MCU specifically that are found families, teams that are put together, the Avengers, the Guardians of the Galaxy, things like that. And while, you know, you don't need to be blood to be family, the Fantastic Four is one of the only examples of an actual family that we have. So Yeah, just wondering what your thoughts on that is. How important is it for this movie to really let that dynamic shine and stand out in the MCU? All right, that's it. Looking forward to everything you guys got coming up. Really excited to see you guys at San Diego Comic-Con. Looking forward to hear all that content. All right, thanks.
Really great question. I want to jump in first because yeah. I've been thinking about this as well. We just recently rewatched over on Friends from Work Plus the old films.
Mm-hmm.
And my color is going crazy on my screen. Sorry, my video is like changing color as we go. Oh, well, I don't know what's going on.
I'm not seeing it.
It's so true. There's just like no family dynamic in the old ones. And mm-hmm. the comic I read of the Fantastic Four is very clearly a family, like very clearly Reed and Sue are married. In this case, they're going to have a child. Like that comic I read has a ton to do with their kids. But you almost forget that Johnny is Sue's brother. In some of the old films, if you don't think about it, you almost think like they're attracted to each other-ish at times.
Yeah.
It's almost like flirty instead of like sibling, like poking at each other. And so I think you legitimately forget they are a family. I really do think that, especially in the originals, they are not married yet. They're getting married, but they're not married yet. There's just very little talk about the brother dynamic. I think that this is a thing that they are going to get very right in this movie. If anything, again, I don't think you're going to think it's underbaked, and I don't think you're going to critique it for the family dynamic not standing out. Even just the one clip of the family dinner, the way they've been posting Sunday dinner posts for 2 months every Sunday. And the dynamic between Johnny and Sue in the trailers even feels more like, oh, that's her brother. Like that's why he's legitimately excited. It is really important though, because that is the thing that makes him unique. We talk often about as you go through these films and you find these characters, like I praised Hawkeye for being something kind of unique, that he has an actual wife and kids. Yeah. Like I think that's a pretty clever twist because so many of the Avengers have broken parents and it's not a normal family dynamic. So you kind of lean into like Daredevil,
adult orphans.
Daredevil has like an open religion. So lean into the fact that his spirituality plays into him as a character.
Right.
What are the things about each character that makes them kind of unique and not just a Tony Stark replica, a rich person who's concerned about things? You know what I mean? Like, how do you?
And he loses it all and has to build himself back up.
The family dynamic is the thing that makes us unique.
Yeah.
You have to get it right. And these other films, especially the 2015 one, just refuse to do anything with it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
I mean, I think it's always interesting, the first family moniker. Like, there are, I think in some ways, they have dialed that in more over the years. Like, it's the first family in that the Fantastic Four is what, you know, was the first real Marvel comic, at least.
But that slogan has like evolved.
Yeah, well, because it's like, you know, they, like the comic you read, by that time, Reed and Sue have two kids. Mm-hmm. And I think them having kids sort of transforms Ben into a member of the family because he is now like kind of an honorary uncle. Johnny's an actual uncle. So I think that like makes it feel even more like an actual family. Whereas like early on, you know, Reed and Sue aren't married, like when the comic starts out. Ben is just Reed's friend. So Ben is not really connected to Sue or Johnny in the same way. And so you get a little bit of that in the movies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think like the thing that, you know, Reed and Sue get married fairly early in the Lee Kirby stuff. And then I think from there, you're right. Like that relationship and like the bond between those four people is kind of what makes that stand out, like especially as the Marvel universe gets more fleshed out and as the Avengers show up and they also have these crazy sci-fi adventures. Like, yes, Fantastic Four is always like the forward-looking exploration like we talked about before, but it is also
even compare that to the Avengers. Like the Avengers are not ever a family. Like, you know, it's like individual people that have to come together and they disagree about things. But if like the Fantastic Four were to have met the Infinity Saga Avengers, that would be the clear defining trait. Like, you never feel in the Fantastic Four, like, yes, they have disagreements and stuff, but as the trailer says, we're going to do this together as a family. The Avengers would never say that like that.
No,
although Natasha says that, but you know what I mean? Right.
But that's also, you know, after a decade or whatever, like,
and after I think, they've lost and, you know.
Yeah. I think that that, like, the Avengers comparison is a great one because, like, it's, they are, like, if you go back to the first Whedon film, where it's like, you know, we're not a team, we're a time bomb.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it is like the whole idea is like they're volatile, they're all individuals,
they're
they
super
don't work
weapons
well together. It's like they have to find a way to cooperate, but the idea is they are all individual superheroes that are being put together. And so I do think, like, I mean, the other thing about the Fantastic Four that I like is that, like, they all have, you know, especially Sue, like, they do have really, like, powerful abilities.
I just got chills thinking of Every World Knows It. Dun, 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 dun.
So, but
there was,
like,
an idea.
They there's something about all of their powers kind of working together to, like, you don't really think of, like, you see, like, Captain America or Iron Man or Thor out on solo adventures, and that seems right. I mean, like, there's generally always an Avengers comic coming out, and there are also solo titles for Thor and Captain America and Iron Man. Whereas, like, Fantastic Four, yes, there have been times where you have, like, half the
Reed
team
show
split
up
off
somewhere
or something.
Else or, yeah.
But it's pretty rare, yeah, that you're going to have, like, a here's a Reed Richards adventure, here's a Sue Storm adventure. It's generally, like, there's something about it where, yeah, they are a unit, and you're not going to have a bunch of, like, solo breakouts or guest appearances because it feels right when they're working together. So I do think, like, the family element's important. I'm just curious, like, because this movie is intentionally leaning into, like, Sue's pregnancy, you know, whether or not we actually see the birth in this movie or not, like, I do feel like they're using that to kind of dial it in the same way that I think the comics did over time, where it's like that, I think, will kind of, that will bring the family together more. And I think the fact that if they do wind up, like, leaving the universe that they're introduced in and heading to ours,
perfect setup,
you know, then they're going to be even more tight knit because they are literally the only, I don't know, like, maybe the only survivors. We still don't know where Doom comes from, but.
So the final two questions we have are about kind of going forward and that. So let's just jump in there with the perfect transition, even though you didn't even know it.
Wow. Hey guys, it's Jalen. Question for you guys. So Silver Surfer, do you think that character's going to get moved over into the main universe, either through this movie or post Secret Wars? As Robbie would know, the Silver Surfer is kind of a big deal in the comics and is around a lot and is actually a really dope character. Do you think they'll basically keep that character around, whether it is the female version we see in the movie and or maybe a post-Secret Wars the male version? Either one, I'm kind of cool with. I think a Silver Surfer one and done would kind of bum me out. What are you guys' thoughts? Thank you, guys. Love the pod.
Love, Jalen. Let me just play this other one back to back just because it kind of relates, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, fellas. Do y'all think that any of our current characters from the Sacred Timeline or MCU 616 will show up in the Fantastic Four? And then while I have y'all here, even though it's off subject, when will y'all be seeing Superman and covering it? And do you need any help from some Sons of Guns?
Wow.
Wink, wink. Hope you are doing good. Bye.
Okay. I tie those together because the obvious biggest question, like, for me, wrestling as a fan, is how are they going to wrap this all up by the end of Secret Wars? What is their end goal at the end of Secret Wars? To what characters that do they want around in the Secret Wars after Secret Wars? What becomes of, like, the Loki TVA slash versus a sacred timeline. Like, do they want this to end with one sacred timeline? And do they want to somehow pick characters from all these others to end up in this sacred timeline? Or was this just a phase, and that's why we're giving nods to characters in like the Fox universe, but there's no real intention there other than if within the sacred timeline, they hope to grow their own. So like, do they want to take this Silver Surfer and drop her into the sacred timeline after all this goes down? Or do they want to say, here's what it looked like to for a different Silver Surfer, but then 5 years from now, we will reboot a Fantastic Four within the sacred timeline. It's maybe different people, or even let's say it's the same people, but it's a different Silver Surfer now. And there's a more organic explanation within the sacred timeline. And I don't know. I don't know on all that stuff. It sure feels like the plot of this movie is going to be the Fantastic Four are heroes. They're saving the day. A giant issue, in this case, Galactus comes to town. They have to defeat it. But even then, Robbie, even then, Galactus eats planets, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't eat timelines.
Right, right.
So, like, if at, let's say at the end of, stick with me on this for a second. At the end of Thunderbolts, we see this tease of a Fantastic Four ship coming to the sacred timeline, Thunderbolts universe.
Yeah.
If that's the Fantastic Four and that's not Dr. Doom in that ship, what are they fleeing? Are they, they're fleeing the fact that their planet was just eaten? In which case, in their universe, they had no other planet to go to?
Yeah.
No, so they're fleeing Galactus?
I mean, so I've wondered this too, and
I think Dr. Doom's in this film at the very end. At the very end. They literally said he's not, but I think the post-credit sequence he is.
I mean, I feel like they have to, like, there has to be something, at least a nod to him if he's not physically in it. But I do think, I mean, I've wondered the same thing because, yeah, Galactus is not a universe-eating entity. He feeds on these planets. But at the same time, they're making a point to show in the trailers that Reed is feeling like he's drawn Galactus to them because of the work that he's doing. And I feel like we get the sense that the work doing.
Like Galactus senses multiversal work?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if they're two separate, and you may be right there. Like, are we talking about two separate threats? Or are we talking about one? Because I'm wondering, like, is there something that Galactus is doing that compromises the timeline? Or are those entirely separate things? Because, yeah, like, I was watching the clip that released the other
day. Is it possible Galactus is not the only threat?
Yeah.
We're seeing, like, the very beginning of the movie in the trailers.
Yeah. I mean, which would be, but, I don't know. Like, I don't want to.
They don't want to diminish Galactus either. Yeah, maybe they don't stop him. Maybe they don't defeat him.
And that's like, I just wonder if, I don't know, like it depends on how they want to play, like let the incursion thing play out, which they really haven't picked up in years meaningfully. And so like, I don't know if that is something that we are seeing. I always thought that once this movie was announced and we realized it was for sure in a different timeline, even before that was announced, I think we had kind of speculated that this would be a way for them to show like the real toll that an incursion can take by getting you invested in one of these worlds before it is destroyed, like the universe before it's destroyed. Whereas like if you only ever see that from the MCU side, it doesn't carry as much weight.
Which I think is you another missed opportunity for Eternals, remember? That could have been.
Yeah,
like if they ended with like destruction, you'd be like, oh man, see?
Yeah,
that's why it matters. Yeah.
And I think like I still think that we're doing that. But yeah, I'm not sure like in the.
If they're doing that, why is their entire timeline being eradicated?
Yeah,
because Galactus isn't doing that, we don't think.
Well, and also like I think, you know, Shackman has talked about how he likes. And again, so, you know, this is all press. And so who knows? But like he talks about how he likes how separate this is, like. it's not burdened with continuity from the rest of the MCU. And that makes sense because it's a different universe. But if the movie ends in a way that really leans into the incursion, Secret Wars setup type stuff, then that still kind of makes it like it's tied in now to the main narrative in a way that, like, I wonder if he's wanting to, like, if he wants this movie to stand on its own in a way that like it maybe wouldn't if it's a direct setup. Like, you know, I think about like Black Panther, which puts things into pieces for Infinity War, but is in no way like you can go and watch Black Panther and have no investment in the Infinity Saga and it stands up. And I kind of feel like he's wanting to approach this in a similar way. So I don't know. I don't know how that affects it.
I've kind of already in my head written this storyline that the Fantastic Four lose to some degree and they are fleeing to the sacred timeline. But I'm just realizing, like, I could be wrong on that. What if the Fantastic Four win whatever their battle is, and that's a friendly, maybe they're literally just going to the sacred time. Like, let's say Reed's messing with like multiversal stuff. Galactus also comes to eat him. They stave off Galactus or make some deal where he doesn't do it, even if they don't defeat him, let's say. But through tinkering with the multiversal stuff, he's now realizing, like, oh, there are these incursions that are possible. Maybe I'll make allies early. And maybe this is an attempt to reach out to the sacred timeline prior to anything happening. Or maybe they do save their universe, but he, in his knowledge, learns Dr. Doom has some other plan, and this is just like a warning to them. This guy is doing this. We figured this out. I didn't know if your timeline had figured this out yet. I just have always assumed he's fleeing, but maybe they're not.
Yeah, I mean, and they're, you know, it could go in so many different directions. Like one of those, I forget which one, but one of those calls talking about like all the comics it can adapt. Like this movie, what I love is that it's clearly adapting the Galactus trilogy from the Lee Kirby era, like very faithfully. And like the clip that we've seen of the Silver Surfer, the stuff that we've seen of the, like, of Reed dealing with it, and like it all feels very much like that. And that was, like, at the time, the biggest threat that the Earth had faced within Marvel Comics. Like, Galactus comes in and it does feel like this apocalyptic thing, because that was before we ever really got into the world of like timelines and whole universes. And so that is happening. But yeah, like, there's also, like, in the Secret Wars comic from Jonathan Hickman, like, it sort of starts off with, after the destruction of all these universes, like, members of the Fantastic Four get into a craft that Reed has built that can survive the collapse of these universes. And they, like, escape on this one, like, kind of life raft, you know, that just has, like, a couple people in it. And so, like, is that what we're seeing in Thunderbolts? Or is it just, like, yeah, is it an exploration thing? Is it like a bait and switch where they do find a way to defeat Galactus, but then there's this actual bigger threat behind it that they didn't think about, that, like, everything then collapses from there? Or, yeah, I mean, because the weird thing is, if they do just leave their universe to come over to help, like I have to imagine, and this is part of it for me, like, part of the reason I think we're projecting that plot, like, I have to imagine that this Fantastic Four team is going to wind up in whatever, like, the universe is moving forward, like what you're saying, post-Secret Wars. And I think that gets to the question about, like, the Silver Surfer. I've thought about that too. Like, I really like what I've seen so far for the character design of the Silver Surfer here.
Oh, I think it's been a universal win, I think, online at least.
But I do wonder if like, they, you know, they would have room now to, like they made a point, and I don't know if it was to separate the original Silver Surfer movie from this one.
Hold on, are you saying that they made a point. There's a chance that the Fantastic Four make it out, quote, but this Silver Surfer does not. but then there's another Silver Surfer in the new one.
Like down the line, like you were saying, like I do wonder.
Is there ever in the comics, does the Silver Surfer ever have a standalone character outside of Galactus? Or is the Silver Surfer only a Silver Surfer because of Galactus?
Well,
are they hand in hand?
He's always created by Galactus.
But he sometimes appears by himself.
Yeah.
Not just like, heralding.
After kind of like in the 2007 movie, where it's like he at some point kind of breaks from Galactus and becomes his own person, but he always gets the power of the Silver Surfer from Galactus. So that's always the origin. But there is like, you know, there are a lot of Silver Surfer comics in the Marvel universe where Galactus is not in there at all. And he's now kind of broken free and is his own hero just traveling throughout the universe. And so that's why I do like the idea, like if we're going to leave this universe behind and leave the Silver Surfer, like I would hope that we do get another version of it in the main 616. But to your point, it would be weird to do it without Galactus. And I don't know if they would want to like redo Galactus when they seem to be doing it so faithfully here. Like I was going to say, they've kind of made a point to have a different Silver Surfer. Like it's not a comic accurate, like bald guy, you know, that's all silver. It's like they've made it like a woman. They've like given it a unique character design. Is that because they're treating it as a variant of the Silver Surfer and we're going to see like a more straight up version? Or is this just, we've kind of gotten a version that's more comic, like more in line with what we expect from the comics already in the Rise of the Silver Surfer. And so now they just want to do something different. So it's not just a straight repeat of that.
Right. And I don't know that,
but I do think that, it kind of going back to the question earlier about the point of the period, I think that plays into all of this where I think it still makes the most sense to pull them out of this universe and put them in ours, because it's like they now have this different sensibility. They come from a different time. Reed thinks differently and has different technology that's developed like in a totally alternate fashion, so that like if he does come into contact with some of the like super geniuses from the 616, they're thinking differently. Right. And so he's always going to be like, it's not necessarily going to be who's smarter, like Reed or Tony Stark. It's just like they will approach everything from a totally different perspective creatively. And I like that. But yeah, I think a lot of that is going to require them to be pulled out in some way. And so what will be pulled out with them? And I think your bigger question about like what we're left with following all this is what I've been thinking about the most, like as Marvel is announcing, or as stories are breaking about like the X-Men stuff and everything that they're planning post Secret Wars. Yeah. Like how much of this can we expect to last after these next Avengers movies? And for Fantastic Four, yeah, how much of a lead in to that is it going to be? And how much is it just going to wind up like maybe we're projecting too much onto this and we need to look at it more as a standalone?
Yeah, it's so freaking difficult when you think about it. Because there's an argument that you could make that you go, what if they went so bold that by the end of Secret Wars, they just said the sacred timeline, like the MCU as we know it, is actually ended. And there's a new, like the new timeline, the new sacred timeline is like an X-Men one now.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going forward. Well, then you're stuck because you're then fully closing the chapter on what you did have as wins. Meaning like then it's pretty hard to justify the Thunderbolts existence going forward.
Right.
Or if Fantastic Four is a huge win, how do you then explain that they are now in this new sacred timeline with the, so if you were going to do that, you'd have to have like a valiant last stand from all the characters in the whole world that we are used to.
Yeah.
And then like shut the door on it, like Thor. Like it's over. Like that's that version.
Yeah.
And out of that is birthed this new universe that's got like X-Men and characters we don't know yet. But I don't think they also can just afford right now to say goodbye to all those people. Like they can't just say goodbye to Spider-Man and Miss Marvel and Daredevil and Thor, and the Thunderbolts and Yelena. I don't think they can just go, that story's over. Here's the new one, because they know like there's going to be tie in there. So it feels like they have to end it with a pick and choose, which is crazy. Like they'll probably just go like Moon Knight didn't make it through the portal or whatever it was, final thing. He just didn't make it. But Spider-Man did swing through.
Yeah.
So now he's in a new one or vice versa or whatever, or they all come to us, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think
the first scene, I have this vision that the first scene or one of the scenes early on, this is literally just out of my own head, is that Dr. Doom is going to go to the TVA and like blow it all up right away.
Yeah.
The beginning of it's going to be, he walks in, he kills everybody, maybe but Loki or something, because he doesn't like what they're doing. And it shows like, wow, he has his magic even in the TVA and no one's ever been able to do that or something. Something like that's going to happen, I think.
Yeah. I also think that like...
And maybe Loki's forced to go to the main timeline then.
Yeah.
And like sees Thor for the first time in, you know, generations for him. You know, outside of time or whatever, or something like that. I don't know.
No, I mean, I am really, we know Hiddleston's in it. And so he has to like, I don't think his role is just going to be sitting, holding the timelines stoically. Right. I'm glad that you bring that up. Like, and this is my last thought here, I guess. There is. Yeah. The really, really bold move would be if the Fantastic Four timeline survived,
like vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, wouldn't it be so fun to wind up in a situation where like the Fantastic Four actually is the first family, like instead of them leaving to join the main universe, like they basically, we see like a rebooted Marvel universe that is rooted in like the 60s comic style and moves forward from there. I don't think it would happen. I think there are too many weird things about that, but they're like the thought experiment of like, instead of that going away and the 616 moving on, I kind of like in some ways, because like to your point, you know, you look at the 616, like the tentpole characters, and for the most part, they have kind of played out their arcs. Like you look at the main Avengers and they're all either like gone or retired or teetering on the edge of retirement. And like, we maybe we'll get one more Thor movie. Steve Rogers is gone. Iron Man's gone. Banner, I think, is supposed to show up in Spider-Man. But like we've said, I think there's only so much more that they will do with the Hulk and with Mark Ruffalo's Hulk specifically.
You're right. But I think that audiences would be really so uncomfortable with the idea that those legacies ended.
And like, I think it would be hard.
You're in a world now where like Tony Stark's death, it's not that it didn't mean anything, but like it ultimately still came to an end for the whole universe.
Yeah.
I think people would wrestle with that. Like a legit full reboot would be tough.
I think it would be hard for people to understand, like for general audiences to track, oh, it's this character from this universe, but now they're living in this universe and that's the main universe moving forward.
But you are right. That also, just objectively, if you zoomed way out, it does feel like a lot of the main famous Marvel characters are coming to an end. It's not like,
yeah,
it's not like there's this crazy, I don't know. The tentpoles are coming to an end.
And like Spider-Man is the one that is not, but he's also the character that now has virtually no ties to the 616 because no one remembers Peter Parker anymore. So it's like it would be a fish out of water thing for Spider-Man, but it's not like it would be him leaving behind Aunt May and his social group.
Yeah, I worry about that one the least, because all they would have to do there is Tom Holland retires. Like his version of Spider-Man's done. And I think people would still be just totally bought into, in whatever new timeline, there's another Spider-Man that swings in and he hasn't had any of those experiences. I don't think people would be as touchy about that.
Or he just comes over, like Holland just comes over. I mean, there's...
Either or, but I...
But yeah, I just want, like, there are things,
it's
right?
It's more where, like, can you live in a universe where, like, what, Thor, Hulk, Tony, Captain America, Black Widow, maybe really just those five, like what they did. Can you live in a universe where like what they did is over? Like it ultimately ended and their universe got wiped out.
I mean, you know? I think what's, it would basically just be like if after Endgame, they had just started a new, like.
But you're not saying, but you're saying their timeline's over. You're not saying like, we just now as an audience shift to this new one. If they leave the multiverse open and they say that was the end of that saga, the 616, like just goes on in normal life and they don't have any more events, that's different to me than if they're saying, no, all of those lose and here's now the one going forward. Because then you have to live with like, that was the end for them.
I mean,
we can't get into all of it right now.
I know. But it is like, yeah.
You also texted me the other day. What if everything we've seen post Endgame is not necessarily all in the sacred timeline? Would it be so bold if they just started choosing like that one actually didn't happen? You were actually watching a different thing.
And not just as like, we didn't like the way people viewed Quantumania. So we're saying that that wasn't canon, but more like, I mean, in some ways it's definitely true. Like No Way Home. Like we know that whole movie shouldn't have happened like in the sacred timeline, right? Like the whole idea of what He Who Remains was doing was like keeping anyone from entering a timeline they shouldn't enter. And so like if Sylvie had not killed He Who Remains or if they had taken his spot, then Toby and Andrew and all the villains and no one ever would have made it over. And so they would have been pruned immediately or whatever. And that didn't happen. Obviously, I don't think that they're going to like scrap No Way Home, but I'm just wondering like if you do look at everything since Endgame, and we know that everything through Endgame essentially is canon, is like the sacred timeline because of the conversations that Loki and Mobius have. So like, yeah, I do wonder like from there, like as we're now looking at all of these timelines and we're going to be looking at different universes and different character sets, like, do we find out like when they combine certain things that like, I don't know, like any number of things were supposed to go differently, and how much can Marvel do that without just confusing people and getting too weighted in continuity? And, but I guess that's like that's why I'm so curious to see how this all pans out. Because like I've said before in the comics, there are Marvel comics that I've loved since 2015, obviously. But I will say nothing has ever felt like after Hickman's Secret Wars, it's been hard to go anywhere else like epic from there, right? Like you can't really scale to where it's like you've had like really great character centric runs, but it feels too much like the finale of all of it, like to where every Avengers book since Secret Wars has felt a little like toothless to me. Like, how are you ever going to outdo their saving literally the entire multiverse? And so I'm trying to think like, what would it look like if they just like hear Secret Wars and it's over, and now it's like, okay, well, you know, next up we've got like Magneto, you know, like it doesn't feel like there's an easy way to move on from that within our same timeline. But yeah,
maybe it's a version where the main timeline loses, but the new timeline has the knowledge of that sacrifice. Then maybe that's a win for all of it.
Yeah.
Like if maybe the new characters still have the memory of what happened with Tony Stark and Thor or Bruce or whatever, then maybe it's okay. Maybe it's like them going like, you know, like literally passing the torch, like we'll fall on the sword. You guys go to the Fantastic Four universe, and like Spider-Man, Ms. Marvel, you go with them. But we lost.
Cause it is like a lot of those. I mean, you think about like the Thunderbolts, like those are all characters that the whole thing is they've kind of lost. Like all they have is each other. Like they don't really have anyone else. So even they could be like ported over, and it really wouldn't be that strange. Like they're already kind of outcasts. I don't know.
find out all this and more in just, I think at this point, 1 week, right? Next week, Thursday.
Wow.
Not all of this, but you'll see if there's a hint in the Fantastic Four. Sorry, we got into a little bit of Secret Wars talk there. Hope you guys are all just having the best summer of your life. Enjoy it. Be kind to one another. And we'll see you back here next week talking about Fantastic Four here on Friends from Work.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo brownie fusion, Pop-Tarts strawberry fusion, strawberry swirl, brownie batter swirl, caramel swirl, and caramel crunch fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.